Hey, everybody. Welcome to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris. She's Natalie
Morris.
That
wasn't really it.
Like, no, we're starting the show. We're starting the show because this damn bird has been outside of our studio for like the past week because like spring started now. So like this bird, which sounds like that. So if you've been hearing this bird, but it's like missing today. So I thought I would just do in the middle of it. I would do my own.
And now I hear the dogs. I don't want to hear that.
Now that Grover thinks there's a bird in the house.
Okay.
Welcome to Redacted on this Thursday.
I was totally tuning you out. Are we really going to do this now?
Yeah, we're really starting.
Now that I know how I sit next to you most of the time like this.
She's just sitting there ignoring me. No.
Okay.
Until I start talking.
Let's pretend we
play
like
bird sounds. And play bird sounds. Welcome. We've got a jam-packed show for you on this Thursday edition. I hope you're in a good mood because you're going to need to be in a good mood for the pile of crap that the government is slinging at you over the past 24 hours. We've got an update on what the Federal Reserve increasing rate means for your wallet and what that portends for the larger the summer and inflation over the summer and interest rates later into the year, what this means for gold, the U.S. dollar, all of that we will break down on the show.
Plus, we are going to give you a follow-up on the Nord Stream pipeline and a new report from Cy Hirsch saying that the government fed the story that the New York Times ran with and the media just picked it up like a good little doggy. We're going to break that apart because it does not inspire confidence in the mainstream media,
and was,
if you had any.
And was Pfizer and Moderna, were they specifically falsifying data as it relates to vaccines in order to get them onto the market? We're going to look at the latest report on investigation on the falsification of tests in order to feed garbage to the government so that the government would allow these shots to come to the market. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome to the Thursday edition. We hope you're doing well. Thank you for all of you who send in kind photos. Many of you sent in photos of your new t-shirts, of your silence equals complicity. I keep thinking complicity equals silence. There it is. Silence.
But that's how an equation works, is that you can reverse them.
Ah, okay. So silence equals complicity t-shirt. So many of you sent in your shirts, and so photos of you, you can send them. If you get one of these on our store, please send them to us, photos@redacted.inc. We do have a community. We have a vibrant community. Thank you to everyone who's become a Redacted Rebel. If you go to redacted.inc, you just sign up. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism and what we do on this show. And if you're on Rumble, you just click that big red join button and you join our locals community there. And again, just for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support what we do. You can also pay more if you'd like. You know, there's different tiers and all that that we're working on. So totally up to you. But again, that's how you can support independent journalism. We are not backed by billionaires. Redacted.inc is the place to go. We've got a lot to get to today on the show. Let's start with the economy. Something very strange happened yesterday. We saw the Federal Reserve basically admit that a recession is coming. Run for the hills. You should start dumping the U.S. dollar, while at the same time telling us that U.S. banks are fine. Like, the banking system is fine, but yes, we are heading for a recession. So basically, speaking out of both sides of their mouths, we have some exclusive video of Jerome Powell as he was heading into this meeting trying to fix the U.S. economy. Take a look at this video. So this is Jerome Powell trying to save the U.S. economy right now, really by just doing whatever they can to kind of shovel crap at things and hope that it will stick.
Well, we have to at least give him a little bit of empathy because he was in a no-win situation. If he didn't raise rates as they had planned to do, it would signal a crisis, precipitated by the loss of so many big banks. If he did raise rates, it would slow down an economy that's clearly in a crisis. So it was a rock in a hard place.
Perhaps, or you could say that they waited way too long, artificially keeping interest rates low in order to, and printing all sorts of fake money. So why?
Sure, but we're talking about the choices he had now, both of which were bad.
Yeah, now, right? But he's been Fed chair for how many years now, right? So he's been in this position for so many years. Like now, yeah, this is the accumulation of all of these bad decisions for years,
right.
Which has precipitated this problem that we're currently in. So.
Yeah, I mean, if I start like storing like open buckets of jet fuel in my apartment for years and years, that I can't complain when it burns down.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yes. You keep putting cardboard next to the gasoline in your garage. Eventually, something bad is going to happen. You probably noticed that something was going on yesterday, because if you looked at your retirement accounts, you may have noticed that it plummeted last night. The Dow collapsed 530 points on this news. 530 points after the Fed hiked interest rates. They hiked, of course, 25 basis points. So what exactly happened here? 25 basis points, what does that mean? This means that we're now at 5% interest, about 5% interest rate for the Federal Reserve, the benchmark rate. That's the rate at which everything else is tied to. Credit cards, everything uses the benchmark rate from which then to do all of their chicanery. Powell basically admitted yesterday that they didn't want to do it, but they wanted to keep their word because they promised they would do it, which is raise rates. Powell then admitted that what we've been saying all along is true, that a recession is coming or is already here. And he said it. He basically said these words. Here are his words, that, you know, that basically it's already here, and that we are concerned about the tightening of this market right now. They released their numbers yesterday from their economic projections, which is basically their semi-annual book of projections. The Federal Reserve is now admitting that the United States, the GDP projections are lower, and there's likely not going to be any more rate hikes. That's basically what we're hearing. Now, we could, they're holding out the possibility that there could be additional rate hikes, but for now, that's basically it. In other words, we're done. We give up, we're throwing up our hands, and we're going to let the market now sort itself out, which many have argued for years is what should have happened. Let the market sort itself out. Let market forces sort itself out instead of
which
being artificially propped
up. Which is something that Ben Bernanke really wanted to do during the 2008 financial crisis, and he was pressured into manipulating these rates when he really didn't want to. He believed in natural market forces. And once you do that, you can't really put that horse back into the barn in any kind of immediate way. So right. Are we now circling back around to not only feel the effects of this financial crisis, but then feel the effects that we didn't feel from the 2008 one?
Perhaps, as we're going to hear from Peter Schiff in a moment, who believes like, that, yeah, this is going to be far worse than what we saw in 2008. So
is this because businesses, like the biggest corporations all can borrow money, and the biggest banks can borrow money at 0%, and now it's at 5%? Because we will go get loans and we pay interest no matter what. So now our interest rates are going to go higher, but are they just pissed because their interest rate is going up and they're going to have to actually pay something rather than these 0% loans that they always take?
Well, it will slow up borrowing quite a bit, and the economy is built on borrowing. And it will also slow up some of the free money that the government has been printing for itself. You know, so when you think back just 3 years ago, when pandemic measures were put into place and the government was basically creating trillions of dollars out of thin air and giving it out to people as an incentive to stay home, well, there was always going to be a time when we all felt the cumulative effect of that, which is what we're doing right now.
Right. Yeah. And as interest rates go up, of course, it makes it more difficult for people to get those loans. It makes it more difficult for people to get home loans.
Yeah.
But.
And so now the people who felt like the pandemic stimulus was a big help to their checkbook, to their checking account, and experts were warning, you will feel this later because the cost of things will go up. So you may enjoy this $1,300 right now because that's going to be wiped away when inflation hits. No one wanted to hear that. No one listened, especially not, you know, people who were saying $1,300 is not going to get me anywhere. I need more so that I could stay home. And when you really unpeel that onion, it was stay home, take this money.
Yeah.
Life's going to get harder for you. We don't have science around why you should do this, but we're going to tank our own economy for faux science and just stay there for a while. And then now we all have to suffer. I mean, this is just one piece of it. Of course, the war in Ukraine has exacerbated that. But we can't put on blinders if we did champion these stimulus packages for whatever reason, because we thought it would slow the pandemic. It didn't, first of all. It didn't do whatever it was supposed to do. And now we all feel it together. Yeah. Because everything's more expensive. Well, so does that mean
like back when there was zero? So if we got a loan personally, and let's say we qualified for 2% interest, now because they have to pass that 5% on to us, we would get the minimum we could get is 7%. Is that kind of how that works?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, interest rates are right around, for like a mortgage, you're like really about like 7% right now.
Like,
yeah.
6.5, 7.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's all those people who got really favorable loans, sub 2%, you know, you should thank your lucky stars for that and keep it if you can, because you're not going to be able to refinance into a better loan anywhere in the near future.
Well, if you look at the bond markets and the people that study the bond markets very closely, these investors are the most sophisticated in the world. They're the smartest investors, and they're projecting a July rate drop. So this 25% basis points that we just saw could actually drop in July, and then another rate drop in December. So if you know, I was looking at the data today in the Fed Watch predictions for July and into the fall, we could see a rate drop, and we could see it drop back down to 4%. In that, which could drop an entire point. That means the US dollar is far less valuable. So what you need to understand about this is that means the US dollar, everything was favorable about the US dollar. That means it's now money will flow out of the US dollar. And that's what you're seeing. You're already seeing it overnight. So investors will take their money out of the United States if treasuries are not as sexy as they were. These bonds are not as sexy as they were. They're not yielding as high returns. And they're going to take them into other currencies, other markets, Chinese markets, European markets, wherever they can get better returns. And so what we will see, we're going to see gold. Gold is already touching around $2,000 an ounce right now, almost like hitting record highs right now for gold. Silver also going up. Real estate, value of real estate. We're going to see gold right now touching that 2000 mark. And Peter Schiff back in the fall nailed this prediction. He said inflation is going to get a whole lot worse. And he was right about that. And he yesterday said, buckle your seatbelts for even higher inflation this year. And now add on to that record high credit card debt that Americans are sitting on right now, like we've never seen before. And he said, this is a financial crisis, even though the media is for some reason refusing to call it a financial crisis. Listen.
That we have record high credit card debt and the banks are failing. It's not a coincidence that both the borrowers and the lenders are broke. You know, the reason for that is the Fed. The Fed kept interest rates artificially low for more than a decade, encouraging people to go deeper and deeper into debt and banks to extend them the credit. And now that they're forced to raise interest rates, something that was always going to happen, they have created another financial crisis, which is something I've been warning about for years. And, you know, the media is reluctant to call this a financial crisis. They keep saying it's a banking crisis. The financial crisis of 2008 was a banking crisis. Nobody wants to say what it is because they don't want to invoke memories and comparisons to 2008. But this is a sequel to 2008. And like all sequels, this one's going to be worse.
It is interesting. Why won't they call it a financial crisis? Is it because Biden's president right now?
Well, we saw this last year when we saw two quarters of GDP loss, which is supposed to be the definition of a recession. And the government then went and released press releases saying we're going to change the definition of a recession.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So it very much is a public relations campaign.
So you have the Fed.
Well, yeah, you don't have to go.
Sorry, go ahead, guys.
I was going to say, just have to listen to Jean-Pierre, because she will tell you this is the best economy. Like, we're doing great.
Yeah.
Jobs are plugging along.
Main
Street, everything's great.
Yeah. Main Street is doing just fine.
Philip, go ahead.
So I was going to say, I just love that. It's my favorite government response to any crisis, anything like that, is like, ooh, that word sounds really bad. It makes us look bad. Let's change the definition.
Right.
Let's just change the definition. It's not a recession because we just changed the definition of recession. This isn't it now.
Well,
we're good.
How many definitions have been changed under the Biden administration? We've changed woman, we've changed vaccine, we've changed, like, all these definitions just keep changing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's called moving the goalpost, you know? So there you have it. The Fed saying basically we are in a recession, which we've all been saying, admitting as much, with GDP projections much, much lower. And again, the U.S. dollar, people jumping out of the U.S. dollar. So we'll keep our eye on what this looks like over the next couple of weeks. And there are still a lot of stress tests. Oddly, the FDIC kind of put on hold this auction for SVB Bank. Like, they were Silicon Valley Bank, they were supposed to, like, put it up for auction. And they suddenly, like, in the past few hours, like, stopped themselves from doing that. So there's some real weird funkiness going on right now in the markets. But, you know, you got to protect yourselves. We've got more news to get to here on this Thursday. We're going to look at the cover-up of the Nord Stream pipeline. Seymour Hersh out with a brand new bombshell report on the Nord Stream pipeline. We're also going to be speaking with Dan Cohen about the latest on why President Biden is flying to Canada today to meet with Justin Trudeau, pushing for an invasion of Haiti. That's one of the things on their agenda. So that's important as the U.S. economy teeters on collapse. He's going to Canada. So we'll look at that. But first, I mean, just talking about gold a second ago, right now, you know, experts are predicting a recession. It's here. And now we had the Fed chief yesterday saying GDP is going to, our projections are much lower, and it basically admitting we are in a recession. Whatever, you know, whatever the Biden administration wants to label it, it doesn't really matter at this point. So if you're interested in investing in gold, which is about to hit records, record highs right now for gold prices. Natalie and I are huge investors in gold, big believers of that, and silver, and real estate, like actual tangible assets that the government doesn't control. Right now, you can actually start purchasing precious metals or converting a part of your IRA into, or a 401k, into a gold and silver IRA that you control. Wall Street doesn't control it. It's a self-directed IRA that you control. And Lear Capital can help you get set up with it today by calling 1-800-613-3557. That's their 800 number. Just write that down and call them, and you get on the phone with them. They can talk you through, like, what it looks like to invest in gold, whether you want to store it, you know, store it in a safe, or how you want to do it. You can get the gold coins, the silver coins, and all of that. They'll give you a precious metals investor guide so you can decide how you want to do it and just learn a little bit about it. Again, it's free. 1-800-613-3557. Or visit LearRedacted.com. And right now, actually, if you buy an ounce of gold, they're doing this through the end of March, I believe, the end of March. If you buy an ounce of gold, they're giving you a free ounce of silver. So that's free money, just getting free silver when you buy an ounce of gold. So really, really great. Anyways, their 800 number is 1-800-613-3557, or go to LearRedacted.com.
All right. Well, did the media swallow a whole load of crap and try to pass it on to you about the U.S. Involvement in the Nord Stream pipeline? Seymour Hersh, journalist who has been covering this extensively, says this is exactly what happened, that indeed the CIA and German intelligence created this whole hogwash cover story and handed it to the media, double-spaced, you know, just exactly what they wanted you to ingest, and that the media ran with it. Here is the report that is out today. Now, remember, in February, Hersh published this bombshell report accusing President Joe Biden of personally ordering the attack on the Nord Stream pipeline, which was a gas source from Russia that was set to deliver affordable energy to Germany and all of Europe. A few highlights from that piece. He said that the U.S. had worked with Norway and used the Navy in order to subvert congressional approval. We've covered this extensively. We believe it's very credible, and it absolutely makes a ton of sense, especially when you recall that the U.S. warned that it would not allow the pipeline to go forward. And then the same U.S. official, Victoria Nuland, who said that, did a victory lap about it after it was destroyed. Watch.
Senator Cruz, like you, I am, and I think the administration is very gratified to know that Nord Stream 2 is now, as you like to say, a hunk of metal at the bottom of the sea.
Yeah, high five about that. We, you know.
The largest terror.
It was a biological disaster.
Yeah, not a disaster. And it was a terrorist attack. It was the largest ecological terrorist attack in world history. And we're okay with that. The green administration of the Biden administration that cares a lot about CO2 emissions and everything else, like, was really concerned about the large amounts of natural gas and methane that they just put into the atmosphere.
Right. It's such a comical clip because she's like, I'm glad that incidentally happened.
Yeah.
I don't know how it did.
How'd that happen?
But wow, that really worked in my favor. Now, the Hirsch report was widely reported abroad, but deliberately ignored by the U.S. media. In fact, when German Chancellor Olaf Scholz visited the U.S. a few weeks ago, the media didn't even ask him about it, even though Germany was to be the recipient of oil from the pipeline. And the Hirsch piece says the U.S. didn't want Germany to have affordable energy because it is part of a concerted effort to hurt the German economy. You would think Germany would at least have a stance on that, or want to investigate, or something. But instead, all CNN did was ask Chancellor Scholz about the war in Ukraine.
It is very difficult to judge what will be the next things to happen in Ukraine, but there is something which is absolutely clear. We will continue to support Ukraine with financial, humanitarian aid, but also with weapons.
But if this continues for years, Ukraine as a country will be destroyed. Its economy is already down 40-50%, depending on what estimate you look at. Is there a point at which you have to start negotiations, and is there a deal to be had where, you know, Ukraine gets some kind of security guarantees from NATO, perhaps EU membership, and in return it accepts the reality that it is not getting Crimea back. It is perhaps not getting some parts of the Donbass back.
There will be no decisions without the Ukrainians. We will not take decisions instead of them. We support them.
But should they, would you encourage them to take these
decisions? So we told them that they can go for membership in the European Union, and they are working to make progress in all the criteria that are important for this. I think they know that we are ready to organize a certain way of security guarantee for the country in times of peace to come, but we are not there yet. And to my view, it is necessary that Putin understands that he will not succeed with his invasion and his imperialistic aggression, and that he has to withdraw troops. This is the basis for talks. And if you look at the proposals of the Ukrainians, it's easy to understand they are ready for peace, but there must be something done, and this has to be done by Putin.
All right, so he's echoing all the talking points of President Biden, even though there must be a seed planted in his head that, well, you know, this guy, Biden, he may not have my best interests at heart and the interests of the German people, but he's willing to go on American media and regurgitate all of the Biden administration's talking points, including by saying, yes, my people in Germany are hurting from high energy prices, and we're cool with that because it's okay to tank my own economy to support this war. Now, here is a summary from Hirsch's piece about just how much it has hurt the German and European economy to not have this oil that they had intended. This is from a source named Sarah Miller, an energy expert and an editor at Energy Intelligence. The quote says, "The destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines in September led to a further surge of natural gas prices that were already six or more times pre-crisis levels. Nord Stream was blown up in late September. German gas imports peaked a month later in October at 10 times pre-crisis levels. Electricity prices across Europe were pulled up, and government spent as much as 800 billion euros by some estimates, shielding households and businesses from the impact. Gas prices, reflecting the mild winter in Europe, have now fallen back to roughly a quarter of the October peak, but they're still between 2 and 3 times pre-crisis levels and are more than 3 times current U.S. rates. Over the last year, German and other European manufacturers closed the most energy-intensive operations, such as fertilizer and glass production, and it's unclear when, if ever, those plants will reopen. Europe is scrambling to get solar and wind capacity in place, but it may not come soon enough to save large chunks of German industry. And by many accounts, solar and wind will never replace that level of industry. The calculations just don't really work. You know, to which no one asked Chancellor Scholz about that affordable energy that they were planning on. And we knew at the time during that visit a few weeks ago that this was intentional. They did not allow any free-form questioning. The president and the chancellor didn't stand side by side and ask questions the way that we saw just this week President Putin and President Xi do. They will do that with President with Justin Trudeau, yeah, when Biden goes to see him later. They did do that with the president of Mexico, but this one, no, is totally tight-lipped for a reason. But discussions of the pipeline did actually happen in private. Here's what he said, is that after this meeting with CNN, it was known that the chancellor had flown to Washington with no members of the German press, no formal dinner, and the two world leaders were not slated to conduct a press conference as routinely happens in such high-profile meetings. Instead, it was reported that Biden and Scholz had an 80-minute meeting with no aides present for much of the time. There have been no statements or writing or written understandings made public since then by either government, but this is Hirsch talking. He says, I was told by someone with access to diplomatic intelligence that there was a discussion of the pipeline expose. And as a result, certain elements in the Central Intelligence Agency were asked to prepare a cover story in collaboration with German intelligence that would provide the American and German press with an alternate version of the destruction of Nord Stream 2. In other words, in the words of the intelligence community, the agency was to pulse the system in an effort to discount the claim that Biden himself had ordered the pipeline destruction.
Pulse the system, pump it with garbage, pulse, pump out a fake story.
To, yeah. Yeah. Poop out a disinformation.
And of course, then, I mean, I know you might get to it, but then, yeah, well, there you go. And I was going to say, then the New York, we saw this right away, right from both the German press and the American press.
Right. So right on cue, the media acted like a good dog and picked up the bone that they were given and went with this story in the New York Times on March 8th. Intelligence suggests pro-Ukrainian group sabotage pipelines, U.S. officials say. Now, a lot of us saw right through this at the time, Philip said, how can we not know who it is, but know their ideology?
Right.
Right. That's strange.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really good point. Like, you know, this person likes strawberry ice cream. Who is it? I don't know.
But we don't know who that person is.
But somebody.
But you just know they like strawberry ice cream.
Right.
They're pro-Ukrainian?
Yes.
AKA the CIA?
Now, a source admitted that this was a false flag story to Seymour Hersh. This source says it was a total fabrication by American intelligence that was passed along to the Germans and aimed at discrediting your story. This is someone saying this to Hirsch, saying, yeah, you touched a nerve. We had to then work defense to distract the public from your truth bombs. The disinformation professionals inside the CIA, to which we know there are many, understand that a propaganda gambit can only work if those on receiving are desperate for a story that can diminish or displace an unwanted truth. So this is to say that the media themselves do not want to believe that the U.S. blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. They don't want to believe that. There's a cognitive dissonance there. He says the truth is that President Joe Biden authorized the destruction of the pipelines and will have a difficult time explaining away his actions as Germany and its Western European neighbors suffer as businesses are shuttered amid high day-to-day energy costs. And it seems that the reporters from the Times knew this, at least one of the reporters. There were three of them, one of them named Julian Barnes and two of them named Adam. So we're just going to call them Adam and Adam. That he went on a podcast, Julian Barnes, recently and was asked about it by the host named Michael Barbaro. And here are the transcripts. And the reporter, Julian Barnes, is saying, you know, in the beginning, this quote, he says, you know, all those states we went through, did Russia do it? Did Ukraine do it? We were just hitting dead end after dead end. We weren't finding officials who were telling us that there was credible evidence pointing at a government. And so my colleagues, these Adam and Adam, we started asking a different question. Could this have been done by non-state actors? And the host is like, huh. And he says, yeah, some group of individuals not working for the government. And the host feeds him this, oh, like freelance saboteurs. Where did this new question take you? And he goes along saying, you know, at the end, yeah, my initial thought that this could be pro-Russian saboteurs turned out to be wrong. We don't know why turns out to be wrong, we learned that it was most likely a pro-Ukrainian group, to which then later in the podcast, he concludes that, you know, look, we know very little. This is mysterious to us, but also to the U.S. government officials that we spoke to. They know that the people involved were either Ukrainian or Russian or a mix, and they are not affiliated with the Ukrainian government. But we also know they're anti-Putin and pro-Ukraine. The host asks another question at the end. You see, he says, well, the intelligence right now is saying that we're not. So while officials are telling us that the president of Ukraine and his advisors didn't know, we can't be certain that that's true. So he's saying here at first that he and his fellow reporters, Adam and Adam, came up with this idea that it was a non-state actor all on his own. Like, oh, that was just our idea, that it maybe was not a government. And then later he admits, but it's the government that told me that it was not a government. And it was freelancers, freelance pipeline blower uppers.
You find them in the yellow pages.
Right.
You can, we need a pipeline blown up. What page is that?
Like they did a Google search, like, who blows up pipelines freelance? Oh,
Super Mario Brothers. Okay, let me call those guys, see if they can help.
Is the pipeline a warp zone?
Right.
It'll take you to level 8.
It'll take you to level 4. Like,
just... These are just not the actions of a Ukraine-hating group. No way.
No, they're pro-Ukrainian.
Yes.
Yeah.
But can we just talk real quick about the handing of this, and by the way, former FBI 25-year veteran John D'Souza, who we had on the show, said that it was well known within the FBI and the intelligence community, if you want a story to get out, you fabricate it and you hand it first to the New York Times, and then, you know, the Washington Post, et cetera. But first is the New York Times. And who was the first to publish this garbage intelligence BS cover story?
Right.
The New York Times.
Yeah.
Right. And they handed it right to them. And then, of course, the Germans run their version of it like a few days later.
Yeah.
Confirming.
Well, remember,
it's unbelievable.
We have that interview with the CIA agent at the countdown, in our countdown timer, that talks about how for Cuba, they manufactured things to make people think there were, you know, what do you say, babies dying in incubators or whatever. And it was completely fabricated. There was no truth to it whatsoever. They fed it to a newspaper. And that newspaper feeds it out to other, and then other media organizations pick it up. And that's how they spread this stuff. This is like CIA 101.
Pulsing the system, right? Pulsing the system.
Yeah, but the difference, sorry, the difference in that, though, was what he was, I was thinking it was John Stockton. What he was describing was like feeding it to the newspapers, and the newspapers didn't know. And so then other newspapers would pick up the story and run it, and that's how they did it. In this case, like, now the newspapers are complicit.
Yeah.
They know. They were just handed the story by the CIA. They don't even like pretend that they have like somebody in there feeding it to them. They just walk in with their CIA badges, hand them the script and say, "There you go." And they run with it.
And they're like, "Cool, I don't have to report it now cuz you gave it to me."
Well, that's like what we covered here on the show last week with Dan, which is Operation Mockingbird is alive and well. And back then it was hidden. So the newsrooms didn't know that they were being fed garbage stories, right? They didn't know that Deep Throat was actually feeding them these stories, right? Or whatever. Now they're complicit and they're on the payroll and they're in the newsrooms with them.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And I mean, I think as evidence for that, especially with like the Seymour Hersh story in the pipeline, that was like a month ago that New York Times published that, right? That where they found out that it was a pro-Ukrainian group.
Yeah.
Have they done any follow-up? Did they release anything about who it was that did it?
No, I haven't seen any updates on this story.
Because they've stopped investigating because they didn't investigate to begin with.
Because there was no investigation. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no journalist covering this beat in that newsroom. They were just handed
this
story.
Well, and we also, thanks to the Twitter files, we saw how much money Twitter made, or the Twitter files that Twitter made from the government. Like, nobody's like, where did that money come from? What was it for? Oh, it's just for, you know, work that we did.
Right. Censoring people. So the FBI felt, because the work was pretty onerous, that the FBI paid Twitter money to do that censoring. So, well, Seymour Hersh is the only journalist really fully doing this coverage.
And, you know, these kind of stories are putting a fine point at the pivotal inflection point that we are at right now, because we know now, like, most people accept that Iraq was based on a lie, that most wars have been based on a lie in the last 40 years. And then for some reason, we continue to swallow government narrative around the current situation, because either you don't live in Europe and you don't care that they don't have affordable energy, or, you know, you continue to want to have a Ukrainian flag in your bio because it fits this virtue signaling that you think that is important for your social avatar. But if we don't admit that previous wars are based on a lie and then we somehow think, oh, but this one probably isn't, you know, then it's extreme naivete on our part. And then you're right, we're being complicit to not at least, you know, at this point, the assumption should be that most things are lies, unfortunately. And, you know, when we start to dig into these stories, we don't go in saying like, okay, where's the bullshit here? We just, it just comes, it just comes to us.
Yeah, then we have to take a shower after all the bullshit. That's what we feel like. Well, we hope that you enjoy our show because we do a lot of work on it and we work hard to bring you value. So if you do, please smash that like button. It really helps push us further out in the algorithm. I know I can see like just a few thousand of you have pressed like so far. So please do us a favor. If all of you watching right now would actually hit that like button, it would push us further out and maybe more people would be informed about what's actually happening in the world. So please do that. Please hit that like button. We've got more news to get to here. We're going to look at why the United States, why President Biden is going to meet with Justin Trudeau and pushing, among other items, for an invasion of Haiti and trying to get the Canadians to do it. Do our bidding, Canadians. It's unbelievable. So Dan Cohen will be here on that story. We're also going to look at a new report about Iraq and civilians being killed at the hands of the British government. We'll dive deep into that. Plus, we're going to look at Pfizer and new allegations about faking of vaccine data in order to get their information, their products on store shelves. But first, attention. Are you an investor looking for an easier way to trade stocks? And would you like 17 free stocks? With Moomoo, my favorite trading platform, there's no steep learning curve. It has a simple interface and it's easy to use, so even beginners can take advantage of the stock market in no time. Plus, it offers powerful tools, often reserved for experienced investors, like customizable watch lists and advanced charting capabilities. And now Moomoo even has a powerful new earnings calendar, so you don't have to hunt and peck trying to find earnings schedules for your favorite companies. Right now, for a limited time, Moomoo is giving away 17 free stocks when you open your account and you make your initial deposits. Even if you never do anything else with the account, you get to keep those free stocks. Moomoo has zero commission trades, and the app looks amazing on every platform, from iOS to Android to Windows and Mac. Moomoo can help you trade with its advanced tools like their stock screener and their earnings calendar. So no matter what your skill level is, you'll find fantastic tools that can help you trade. Open your free Moomoo account today. Get access to zero commission trades and 17 free stocks when you open your account and make your initial deposits. So to learn more, check out our link at redacted.inc/Moomoo. That's redacted.inc/Moomoo. Well, the Biden administration is getting set to push for an invasion of Haiti, and it's ramping up full steam as President Biden flying to Canada to meet with Justin Trudeau. Among the agenda items is that invasion of Haiti, trying to push Canada for their troops or forces to fly into Haiti so that, I guess, the United States doesn't have to do that. Meanwhile, the United Nations also separately trying to justify an invasion of Haiti because of human rights abuses, they say, in Haiti. To make sense of all of these moving pieces, we want to bring in Washington correspondent for Redacted, Dan Cohen. Dan, good to see you. So why is President Biden flying to Canada in order to push for this quote-unquote invasion of Haiti?
Well, ever since the assassination of President Jovenel Moise in July 2021, the U.S. has planned for a military invasion of Haiti, basically seeing there is an armed movement that is growing and uniting neighborhoods called the Revolutionary Forces of the G9, led by a former police officer named Jimmy Cherizier, nicknamed Barbecue. And of course, we at Redacted have covered the story of Haiti and the G9 intensively. And you can see our reporting from back in November when myself and my colleague Kim Ives were on the ground reporting. But the pressure is really ramping up now. We saw this statement from, well, first we have the headline from the Washington Post, which completely confirms it, that there is a military intervention in the works. The U.S. very much wants it. And now we have a statement from the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights. And Its spokesperson, Maria Hurtado, here's the exact quote from her. She says, "We call on the international community to urgently consider the deployment of a time-bound specialized support force under conditions that conform to international human rights law, et cetera, et cetera." So that's pretty remarkable to me to hear this from the UN High Commission on Human Rights, calling for a military invasion of Haiti, especially knowing the horrific history of what previous foreign invasions, whether by the United States or UN so-called peacekeepers, have wrought on Haiti, from, you know, rape of Haitian women and many fatherless children to massacres, to this kind of thing. So Biden is going to Canada to meet with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on Thursday, March 23rd. He's heading out there, and apparently he's going to be putting some kind of pressure on Trudeau to carry out this intervention. And there apparently is some kind of hesitance from Trudeau to get fully involved in Haiti. 2 weeks ago, on March 9th, Canada's top general said that the Canadian military is actually stretched thin and that it does not have the capacity to carry out this military intervention in Haiti because of what it's doing in Ukraine, essentially for the United States. Now, Canada has already sent multiple shipments of armored vehicles to Haiti. Those armored vehicles were instrumental back in November when I was on the ground in Haiti in overcoming the barricade that Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier and the G9 had put on the Vero fuel terminal. And they had done in order to basically resist US and IMF imposed fuel price hikes. Canada has also sent further shipments of armored vehicles. They've deployed military surveillance aircraft and naval ships to patrol Haiti's coast. And even the Canadian military firm Incus, which manufactured those armored vehicles, ran a troll farm in order to gin up support for an invasion. And that's something we reported exclusively here at Redacted. So all of this, and the Canadian government says it's stretched thin over Ukraine. And according to Colin Robertson, who's vice president of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute and is a former high-ranking Canadian official who had posts inside the United States, he says to Reuters, quote, "The Americans, I think, are reaching a point where they are getting fed up." So it, on one hand, I have to wonder, is it sort of theatrical because there's really no daylight in general on foreign policy in particular between the Canadians and the Americans? But then again, it may be that the Americans are really trying to push the Canadians to get in line to carry out this invasion, because the Americans, the Biden administration, knows that any American flag that is, you know, planted down on Haiti is going to be totally rejected. The Haitians do not want any foreign invasion, and especially an American invasion of their country.
It's an amazing moment, right? When there's this maybe self-awareness now that we've got, we're trying to push our, we're trying to push our imperialism onto other countries to carry it out on our behalf. But I do love the response that you just mentioned from the Canadians, or at least the reports about their involvement in Ukraine, is why they're stretched so thin. Because according to the reports I've read from the Global Affairs in Canada, there are only 24 deployed officers in Ukraine as of early 2022, and in, I mean, how many more since then? 24 soldiers. So Canada's army military is stretched thin because of 24 people in Ukraine. Somebody's not telling the truth.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit fishy. I don't know. I mean, maybe you know, Biden's gonna go there and pressure Trudeau to ramp up military spending. You know, like get up to that. All the NATO members have to spend, what, at least 2%. And I don't think Canada is there. So maybe it is, you know, it's really hard to tell. Is this sort of theatrical where it's, you know, Biden saying, oh, we really need you to go do this. And Trudeau saying, oh, well, I don't know. You know, we don't want to be involved, and appearing hesitant in order to kind of de-emphasize the overtly imperialist, you know, aggression that would be this military intervention. You know, I do think one of the interesting aspects is Haiti is totally awash in violence. Maria Hurtado, the UN High Commission spokesperson on human rights spokesperson, cited the deaths of something like 500 people, 500 Haitians at the hands of because of gang violence to justify her call for military intervention. The thing is, much of this violence, particularly since January, has been perpetrated by a gang leader and his group named Vidalome Innocent. And he's been the primary kidnapper this year and gang leader who's been clashing with the police, who's been killing innocent people. The thing is, he used to have a relationship with a political party called the Democratic and Popular Sector, which is led by a politician named André Michel. André Michel and his party are a mainstay of the de facto prime minister Ariel Henry's party, of his coalition, rather. So when the basically political appointments were handed out, this guy, Vidalome Innocent, got shafted. He got the short end of the stick. He wasn't given essentially the political power he wanted. And so he's gone on a rampage ever since and become the most prominent killer and criminal in Port-au-Prince and pretty much in all of Haiti. But for all of this talk about gang violence and people being killed, the intervention is not aimed at him. It is aimed at one of his rivals, Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier, who is smeared as a gang leader, right, but is not a gang leader at all. And in fact, he's the only so-called gang leader that any of the Western press can go sit down and interview. And, you know, like we talked about, we reported weeks ago, the AP can just show up at his neighborhood and demand an interview, and he even granted it to him. So this guy Vidalome has been completely terrorizing swaths of Port-au-Prince. His men even overtook the neighborhood of Pétionville, which is the wealthy suburb or wealthy area above Port-au-Prince. It's almost like in Los Angeles, if, you know, gangs that were fighting in South Central in poor neighborhoods went and, you know, one of them went and took over Beverly Hills. So it is major. It is a major development that this happened in Pétionville, above Port-au-Prince. But nonetheless, the one person who this is really aimed at, this intervention, is the guy who's under U.S. sanctions, EU sanctions, Canadian, UK, and UN sanctions. That is Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier. None of the other so-called gang leaders are under sanctions like him, and the U.S. has repeatedly directly threatened him. So there's a sort of irony of who the Biden administration wants to target or wants Canada to target on its behalf.
Well, we'll see. So President Biden in Canada meeting with Justin Trudeau. One of the agenda items is this invasion of Canada or invasion of Haiti. It's also an invasion of Canada as well. We'll see if Canada bites on this and what sort of troops they will align and bring to Haiti and what the United Nations does on this as well. Dan, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And thanks for staying on top of this story for us.
Thanks a lot, Clayton.
All right. So thank you, Dan. We really appreciate it. We've got more news to get to here on your Thursday. We're going to look at what's going on in Iraq with the civilian casualty report that's just seen the light of day. It's amazing how it takes us a few years to get to the bottom of it. The truth of these warmongers will get there. Plus Pfizer and new allegations about Pfizer and BioNTech fabricating data and information in their vaccine tests in order to get those on store shelves. We'll tell you about that. But first, I don't know if you guys saw so that Dr. Fauci documentary that was out there. And one of the things that they talk about is, wow, everyone can find Dr. Fauci's personal information. His wife was complaining about that. Well, that's because, well, everything's available on the internet these days. Personal email, you know, legal name, home address, phone numbers, all that stuff, relatives' information. So this information is accessible because of data brokers who profit by selling your information to robocallers, telemarketers, spammers, anybody else out there who wants to learn more information about you. That's why I'm excited about, you know, to tell you about today's sponsor, Aura. Aura will identify data brokers that are exposing your information and automatically submit opt-out requests on your behalf. They'll even opt you out of junk mail and telemarketing lists. So you can use our link at aura.com/redacted to try it for 2 weeks to see how many data brokers are sharing your information. Also, you'll see the link in my description, or right there, there's a QR code right on your screen. You can scan that QR code that you can use as well. So, I mean, it was recently we had our Facebook account hacked and taken over, and it took us like, I don't know, like almost like 2 months, I feel like, to get it back. And it's amazing the stuff and alerts that will be sent out to me. So with Aura, you'll get these alerts for things that are trying to get caught. They're trying to catch people in the act. And the other day, someone was like trying to break into a Twitter account that we have and I was like, and it said, somebody in India just tried to log into your Twitter account. I was like, what? No, that wasn't me. I don't live in India. That's not me. So Aura is fantastic. They really find all of this stuff and will alert you about it. So let Aura do all the hard work of keeping you safe online. If you sign up right now, Aura will give you a 2-week free trial with our link. You'll be shocked at how much of your private information Aura finds exposed over those 2-week period. So go to aura.com/redacted, and you can use that QR code that's right on your screen right now as well to start your free trial. And we'll also have a link in the description below for aura.com/redacted. All right.
Okay. Do you want to move to Rumble for this, or we're going to stay here for a little bit? And then...
Yeah. Why don't we, do you want to move? Yeah. Let's move over to Rumble now. Shall
okay.
we?
All right. So we're going to say goodbye to our friends over on YouTube. We're taking all of our subscribers, and we're going to go over to a non-censorship platform. So we'll say goodbye to you. That ends our live show for the week. We'll see you back here on Monday. But to those Rumblers, stay put. Stay right where you are. I love to see the comments saying, oh, here come the new YouTubers. So everyone get along. Everyone must get along, because we must agree that you guys are the smartest audience in all of streaming news platforms. I believe such smart people, and we need all of your contributions. So here we go.
Yeah, rumble.com/redacted is the URL. rumble.com/redacted. Come on over there right now.
All right. Well, we want to tell you about this. Did the British government lie about protecting civilians in Iraq? This is true, according to an expose from The Guardian and Air Wars. Now, before we get into this story, though, I want to point out something that I missed last week. Air Wars is the same organization that told us, and we reported last week, that the U.S. had bombed civilians in Somalia. And so we covered that story with reporting from this group, but this is not necessarily an unbiased group. It definitely is a damning report, and I think we should look at it, but I want to just say, who is this group and why are they telling us this? Because we have to sort of be critical about everything. Now, Air Wars is a nonprofit watchdog that tracks civilian harm in Middle Eastern countries. They say that they don't accept government donations, but their website indicates that they have accepted government grants, and they are also funded by George Soros.
Hmm.
Here is where they admit that funding comes from the Open Society Foundation, supporting their work in Iraq, Syria, and Libya. Well, the Open Society Foundation is founded by George Soros. Take a look at this. This is where their homepage, where they say as much. And if you search the grants that they have awarded, you can see that they've given hundreds of thousands of dollars in previous years, since 2016 at least, to Air Wars. In fact, Open Society Foundation does not receive funding directly from the government, but some of their programs do receive government grants and government partnerships. So indirectly, by working with Open Society Foundation, Air Wars does have connections to government funding. So I think it's important, because my spidey sense went up at the mention of this conflict. We still should go through the report, but as Caitlin Johnstone just last week reminded us, that we really should not be just sort of blindly accepting what think tanks say, because so many of them have conflicting dollars coming in. Here's the tweet she posted last week. Empire-funded think tanks are not valid sources, and it is not acceptable for journalists to cite think tanks funded by governments and the military-industrial complex as sources of information or expertise on matters of national security or foreign affairs. That doesn't mean that we're going to throw this report away. That means that we're going to keep it there, know who is connected to it, and then ask relevant questions. Okay?
Okay.
All good?
Yeah.
So the report from Air Wars and The Guardian publishes reports from Freedom of Information requests showing that the UK government did harm civilians in drone attacks while fighting in Iraq between 2016 and 2017. Well, why was the UK there in the first place? Because the US invited them along while they were fighting ISIS in Syria and Iraq. The UK had previously claimed that they fought a perfect war against the Islamic State, which is a term I very much object to. There is no perfect war unless it's the war that was avoided, in my opinion. But these newly published documents show from government reports that they knew that they had hit civilians and that there were attacks that could have been averted. Now, I'm going to play this video. It is 5 minutes, so I want to ask you to be patient as you stick with it, because it will lay out exactly how these strikes on civilians affected civilians and how they actually could have been averted. So stick with it. I'll see you in 5 minutes.
In 2016, 6-year-old Iraqi Taiba Yunus was killed by a missile dropped by the US-led coalition. 6 years after the incident, Air Wars and The Guardian located Taiba's family. We visually reconstructed their testimonies and compared them to newly declassified coalition documents detailing the airstrike. This is the story of the mistakes that led to her death, a single airstrike, and a pattern of failure which killed thousands of civilians. November 29th, 2016. For months, Islamic State militants and coalition-backed Iraqi forces have been fighting in Mosul, Iraq's second-largest city. The fighting has reached the residential neighborhood of Al Ilam, home to the Yunus family.
طبعاً هذا الشارع سيطروا عليه هنا من سيطروا عليه هنا هذا الشارع الذي هو صار خط الصد الذي بيننا بين الدواعش وبين الجيش.
18,000 feet above, a coalition drone is scanning the streets. Pentagon documents released to the New York Times included a civilian casualty report on the same date, corresponding to the street of the Yunus family house. The document contains a chat log between surveillance analysts, aircraft ground support, and the mission commander, as well as a written description of the drone footage. At 15:42, after an analyst observes ISIS fighters firing from the roof of a building, the mission commander requests a strike. At 15:47, the strike is approved. In the minutes after the approval, the analysts appear to expand their monitoring, tracking multiple men coming and going on the road. On 5 separate occasions, they announce they have lost sight of their target. Shortly before 4 p.m., Inam Yunus decides to take her 3 children from her father's home to her husband a few streets away. Her 6-year-old daughter Taiba doesn't want to leave. At 16:05, the aircraft ground support reports that they have lost the militants they were approved to strike. Somewhere between then and 16:10, the analysts identify a group of 4 adult males on the sidewalk. The men are carrying a possible rifle. Our review of the chat log found that there is no confirmation of the weapon or that this group were the same militants that they had been approved to target. At 16:10, 23 minutes after the initial approval, the missile is fired. Despite the operators losing track of the initial target, no new approval is requested. This appears to be in breach of the coalition's rules of engagement. Inam and her family have just left their home, watched by 3 male family members, including her father. It is possible that the group of alleged militants the strike was targeting were in fact these relatives. They walk past the door of the neighboring house. Inam and her father said that there were no fighters within 30 meters. At 16:10, a surveillance analyst calls splash as the missile explodes. Immediately afterwards, another analyst says civcas, meaning civilian casualties, adding, at the last moment, 2 children exited the building.
راحت هيك بعيد عني بس هي يعني تباوع عليها وانا باوع عليها حسيتها يعني عايشه مو ميته طيبة صارت يعني شلون اني هيك وهي هيك مقابلي حسيت طيبة انه قلبي علمني انه طيبة ماتت.
Our analysis shows that the weapon used was likely a Hellfire, an anti-tank air-to-ground missile fired from a Reaper drone. Experts say that during what is usually a 30 to 45 second flight, a Hellfire missile can be redirected to a safe point, identified before launch if civilians are at risk. The missile can be diverted up to 2 or 3 seconds before impact, although satellite signals can add a 1 to 2 second delay. Although it is a residential area, there was a clearing 150 meters from the house. Taiba and her family walked around 12 meters, which would take an estimated 8 to 10 seconds. The coalition's post-strike review of the drone footage concluded Enam and the children were visible before the strike. It is unclear why the analysts did not notice them earlier. The coalition has not declared which nation conducted the strike. Documents released to Airwars under the Freedom of Information Act showed the United Kingdom conducted a strike which corresponds to the date, area, and munition used. A coalition review recommended that the drone operators be sent for further training on the rules of engagement and positive identification of targets. The target executive authority was urged to review the amount of time operators have to conduct a strike without seeking reapproval. The Ministry of Defence refused to confirm or deny its involvement. Full investigations were opened in only 12% of confirmed reports of civilian casualties between 2014 to 2019 in Iraq and Syria. Enam lost both legs, while her other children were badly injured.
أريد يعوضوني. هو ماكو شيء يتعوض بس أريد يعوضوني يعني إنه وفروا لي حياة مريحة.
So this shows that the UK government has actually documented it. And you see this in a paper trail that says it hit civilians and that they knew it at least in enough time to have diverted that missile, but did not. And they have documented it. There are reports confirming at least 32 other previously unreported deaths. And here is the map that Air Wars is giving us of where some of these attacks went. And their summary, it says, now two sets of newly declassified documents led us to identify 8 more strikes, which may have been conducted by the UK. In these cases, the coalition accepts that at least 32 civilians were killed, and through Freedom of Information Act requests, Air Wars obtained the dates and locations of the 1,166 weapons released in which the UK claimed its strikes killed or harmed ISIS militants. Now, they were able to look at the reports of these killings and also corroborate that those strikes happened on those dates and that the UK was the one flying these missions. Here is what a spokesperson for the Ministry of Defense said to The Guardian when they published this. They said, there is no evidence or indication that civilian casualties were caused by strikes in Syria and Iraq. The UK always minimizes the risk of civilian casualties through our rigorous processes and carefully examines a range of evidence to do this, including comprehensive analysis of the mission data for every strike. So, are we to believe that the UK may have accidentally killed some civilians, but this is the extent of it? Or is this a report showing us just one piece of what is probably a much bigger puzzle? We talked about that as a tactic earlier in the week when we talked about the Graphica report that was mentioned in the Twitter files as publishing disinformation through Twitter or suppressing conversation around COVID, but then turned around and gave us a report about how the Pentagon is guilty of psychological operations, even though they're funded by the Pentagon. So it would seem this is sort of part of this, you know, if I'm extrapolating here, of course, but this agency does have connections to government funding, and now it's telling us the government is doing bad things. So can we have full confidence that they're telling us everything, or should we just say, or is this leading us to say, yes, a few, you know, Iraqi kids were killed. It's necessary. We feel good about it now because we know the government will be more transparent now because they've told us. So carry on. Right.
Right. Well, as Madeleine Albright has said, that, you know, that's just part of the game, right? The killing of children. In this, like, that's just fine.
It's other people's children.
Who it's
look,
fine.
Don't look like us.
Right. Brown kids. That's collateral damage. That's going to be fine when she's asked.
I mean, they're poor anyway. They live these lives, you know, covered in flies is what we're supposed to think. It plays right into this ability, because you can stomach the pain of other people if they are the other, if they are put away from you. You can't see them. You can't understand their language. It almost doesn't matter to us.
I was going to say, remember when Michael Moore was chasing after like congressmen and senators saying, hey, you going to send your kids to war? And they're just like, blowing him off like he's some conspiracy theorist idiot because he's asking such a question.
Yeah, because no one in Congress has kids fighting these wars.
Because people in Congress have great grandkids now. They're right. They're too old. Again, the question is, what are we supposed to take? What are we being invited to see here? And are we being invited to see the whole piece of the pie? And my point in pointing out the conflicting funding here is that probably this is not it. And I don't think anybody thinks like, they were dropping drones. The Obama administration ramped up the drone program. Probably a lot of people were killed, but we know the extent of it now. It's over. That's okay. We'd be naive to not think that that is going to continue to happen. This is a reminder that people die in war and not just soldiers. And we should not be stomaching that then. We should not be stomaching that now. But on this, the week that this report comes out, the British military gets this big public relations hit today because Prince William made this surprise visit to the Ukraine-Polish border in order to meet the troops stationed there. Here are a few pictures of him meeting British and Polish troops stationed near the Ukrainian-Polish border and praising their cooperation and support of the people of Ukraine and their freedom. His job looks awful. Like, to just sort of sit there as a figurehead in order to punctuate. They're not supposed to be political, first of all, the royals, and here they're clearly taking a side.
You got to think of the propaganda, the optics of this, right? On the same day that Boris Johnson is being grilled about lockdown hypocrisy, right, in testifying yesterday and that, he's there so the British press will be focused on the prince going to Ukraine instead of Boris Johnson having to deal with lockdown testimony, right?
Right.
And because Boris Johnson is the guy, of course, who was pushing actively for no peace in Ukraine,
yes,
and additional money and weapons into Ukraine. So we can't have him looking bad. So Prince, go to the border. Let's get some press coverage.
This picture here, can you find the one where he's talking to the lady in the Adidas tracksuit? This one just looks like he's sort of furrowing his brow and nodding like, yes, you're telling me things to which I have no effect on, but I'll stand here and validate them. And I just think to myself, like, what a sham this is. This is a charade to participate in this. And
you'll use these people as photo ops.
Exactly.
Right.
Because Prince William is a fun character to look at. He has personal intrigue. So I guess, are we supposed to think that these casualties of war were a thing of the past and it won't happen anymore? And Prince William is there to make it smile and make it look nice and humanitarian. I suppose that's what we're being invited to feel and think here. But let us know what you actually really feel and think about this in your comments below.
Why doesn't he go to the eastern border? That would be more interesting. I'd like to see him go to the eastern part and instead of the Polish border. Maybe he's just getting ready so when Poland takes over the western part of Ukraine and annexes that and now rolls that into Polish territory, they're just kind of prepping everything, getting ready for that.
I suppose. And, we've seen plenty of high-profile people go actually into Kyiv. They absolutely could, blow those air raids and have him run around. That would also serve their...
serve their agenda better, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've done it with Angelina Jolie and Sean Penn and President Biden and,
Yeah.
So they could. Why not? They just stopping short, I guess.
That's my move. Stopping short. All right. We've got more news to get to on this show. We're going to look. We have a great interview coming up here with Sonia Elijah, who's an investigative journalist. She's been doing amazing work on the Pfizer and BioNTech falsification of data to get these vaccines on the market. We're going to sit down with her because she's got a second part of her investigation diving more deeply into this data. And I can't wait to ask her about all of that. But first...
Well, we'd like to tell you about our friends over at Tax Network USA. If you owe back taxes or have unfiled returns, don't let the government take advantage of you. Tax Network USA is a nationwide tax resolution firm that can protect your rights and settle your back taxes. And in some cases, they can even zero out your balance. They are experts in all IRS programs and understand tax law so you don't have to. Over the last 14 years, Tax Network USA has saved over $1 billion in back taxes for their clients. They can even file your yearly returns in order to protect you from audits. The Biden administration, we know, will be overhauling the IRS so that they can levy bank accounts, garnish wages, and Social Security benefits like never before. They can even seize your property like your business, home, or retirement accounts. So whether you owe a few thousand or a few million, they can help you. Even if you haven't filed in years, they still can help you. Even if you have a prepayment arrangement, they still can help you. So call them in to help with you and your tax situation at Tax Network USA or visit taxnetworkusa.com/redacted. Once again, that's Tax Network USA. taxnetworkusa.com/redacted.
Well, did Pfizer and BioNTech falsify data on their vaccines, lying to different governments in order to get their products approved so that we would all be guinea pigs for that? Well, it appears that's exactly what happened and what investigative journalist Sonia Elijah has uncovered writing for Trial Site News. And Sonia has been a guest on our show before in part one of her investigation into what these companies have done. She's out with a bombshell new second part of this investigation, and she joins us back here on the show. Sonia, welcome back to the show. Good to see you.
Thank you, Clayton. Thanks for having me back on.
My pleasure, and thank you for your amazing work on all of this. The details that you're able to go into make my head spin. There's so much details of these tests and lab results that you've been verifying and checking and corroborating with different experts on. It's just mind-blowing. So perhaps before we get into the new stuff here in your next investigation, can you just give us a recap on what you uncovered and sort of set the stage for what you discovered in your first report?
Yes, I will. So just to recap, the European Medicines Agency and other regulators were very concerned. This is towards the end of November 2020. They were concerned about the quality of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. And what they had observed was a drop in the RNA integrity level of the commercial batches of the vaccine. And the reason why there was a drop was because there was a presence of truncated, which means fragmented, modified mRNA molecules in the vaccine. And so they were essentially not intact, which was very alarming because they didn't know the safety or efficacy implications because of these truncated species that were present. So they granted authorization, conditional marketing authorization. This is the EMA, the European Medicines Agency, on the basis that the marketing authorization holder, which is BioNTech, do further testing of their product to prove its fidelity and to show that only the spike protein was being expressed by the modified vaccinal mRNA, and also that their product was consistent across batches. They also wanted BioNTech to further investigate and characterize these truncated, fragmented mRNA species. And so that's sort of where my report sort of goes into and looking at the tests that they did. So they submitted to the FDA a Western blot that it looks very automated, sort of computer generated.
And a blot test, just to be clear, it's like the black dots on a spectrum.
What a Western blot does, it actually it detects specific proteins. And that's what they were looking for. They wanted to show that it was a spike protein coming out at an expected molecular weight. So the scandal here, it's not just that they looked unusual. Of course, you can say they're just computer generated and that's why they look like that. But an anonymous expert provided to me key evidence with videos and a diagram showing he used computer software analysis, image software analysis, and was able to show, this is prima facie, that literally BioNTech and Pfizer copied and pasted certain groups of bands across four different vaccine batches, transfected at six different concentrations. And the odds of that happening by chance is literally impossible, you know. So they've been copied and pasted here. And I looked further into this, and also they produced a Western blot they submitted to the EMA, the European Medicines Agency. And these blots look very different. They're very thick, black bands, very homogeneous looking. And I thought, what, I'll compare it with Protein Simples technology, which is a technology used to produce these automated Western blots. And this is apparently the same technology they use, because this was in a Pfizer-funded paper by Patel et al., which they specified the technology. And I looked at the product brochure of this company that makes these, and it looks very different. You can still see a smeared effect. There's like a gradient. It's not all homogeneous. So each band looks slightly different. So, you know, the BioNTech's ones look very unusual. It looks like, and I spoke to an expert here. I spoke to Kevin McKernan, who is the who's R&D lead on the Human Genome Project. He's a world-renowned genomic scientist, and he had a look at the data and said, look, this data is unusable. He suspects what they've done, they've literally upped the gain. They've manipulated the saturation levels. This is via the computer. And it looks like they're hiding dirty bands, he said. So you've got one thick band, but in that thick one sort of band, there could be multiple bands that have been hidden because they've manipulated with the visuals.
Because I love photography and as a hobbyist. So when you're amping up something like that, that saturation, you're basically bleeding. And I almost imagine, like, you've got a few, like your kids, you know, they've drawn something on, you know, like with watercolors. And then they just like would pour a whole bunch of the paint on top of the little bands that they drew. So it oversaturates it and it hides those initial lines that your child drew. So by amping up the gain, amping up the saturation, they're hiding something with this. What would they be hiding? What did he say about that?
They're hiding sort of different proteins that could be present other than the spike protein, coming at different molecular weights. So these proteins out there, the unit measurement is kilodalton. So the expected molecular weight for the intact full length spike protein is about 141 kilodaltons. And, you know, you can see other bands coming at you know, different weights. But there's no, you know, we don't know what they are. Now, I wanted to talk a bit about the authentic Western blots that they did do. They did two of them. And what's really astounding, Clayton, is just recently I have had access to their authentic Western blot, and that came via the court-ordered Pfizer data dump. I'm sure you're aware of the court-ordered Pfizer, released on a website. This is to promote transparency. So buried in all those documents, that there was that Western blot that they submitted to the regulators. And this is a really unusual Western blot because their description underneath, this is BioNTech's description, is completely the opposite of actually what's been shown. And what has been shown, and the EMA regulator flagged this because they also said, what's going on here? There is nothing coming up at the expected molecular weight, which is 141 kilodaltons. What we're seeing is two bands, one at 190 and one at 100. What are those? Please, can you explain what those are? So this speaks to...
can they explain what they are?
I mean... this speaks to the fact that there are other proteins being expressed by the modified mRNA in the vaccines. And it's just really alarming. They're like mutant ones being expressed. So they also did, they did another authentic Western blot, which was in the EMA report. You can also see it in the Patel paper. And what they did was they in order to further investigate these truncated mRNA species, to prove to the regulator that they were not capable, these truncated species were not capable, or they lacked the capacity for protein expression, what they did, they engineered a batch, which is very unusual. They didn't go with a sample that they had. They engineered a specific batch, batch number 1071509. They intentionally degraded it by heating it up, by exposing it to elevated temperature. And what you get here, it's really interesting. So I've sort of circled in red. When you look at the point where the product has not yet been degraded, it hasn't been degraded by heat, you see multiple bands there when you shouldn't be seeing that. You should just be seeing the one at 140, which is there. And they've asterisked it with a green little star saying, look, that's the one that's, you know, showing it's intact, it's undergrad. But then you've got lots of other bands underneath. There is no explanation about what they are, why they're there. And the regulator doesn't even seem to ask as well. I mean, it's really bizarre. You have further requested tests asked by the EMA for BioNTech to fulfill, which they did not fulfill, which was to do further characterization for at least three different modified mRNA batches. And we know that by August 2021, they failed to do it. And then I recently had a look just by the last updated February 2023 report, it's still left unfulfilled. So this is really alarming. And why are the regulators not enforcing this? Why are these tests not done properly? We're seeing dodgy data here. And Kevin McKernan, in the interview I had with him, he raises such an important point. He says, why do we not have any genomic sequences of the lots? Now, it's within BioNTech and Pfizer's capacity, within their resources, to do genomic sequencing of the lots. We don't have any of those published anywhere. We're just relying on these sort of dodgy looking Western blots as to prove the fidelity of their product. I mean, it's astounding that the regulators have just passed this through, no questions asked or appeared to ask questions, but it seems like it's just been a ticking the box exercise for them to appear like they're doing their job, which they
have not. What is the, I'm sure that when the EMA heard about this, that Pfizer and BioNTech were falsifying these tests in order to get their products out to the public, that the FDA and the EMA immediately moved to pull these products off the shelves and no longer have these drugs administered to people. I'm sure that's the case, right?
Of course not, Clayton. Of course not.
Have they responded at all to this?
Well, they did. They did respond to me. I'm just trying to look for their quote because I would like to quote them as they said it. They just said, well, the reason why the blots look sort of, you know, not so clean is because the quality had dropped because it was the way they had it. There was a drop in the quality in the, I'm just trying to look for it. But they basically said whatever the test they did at that time was appropriate for that time. It was appropriate. I obviously contacted the FDA, Pfizer, BioNTech, not heard a peep from any of those companies. And so obviously the regulators.
The test was okay for them to do at the time, which was...
That test was acceptable for them to do.
Which to copy and paste, to fake and falsify is acceptable to them, basically.
Well, they did not admit that it was falsified. They just said, well, it looked like that way because it was the quality had the way it was scanned in or something. There was a loss in quality and that it was appropriate.
The photocopy machine, the Ditto machine they were using, the photocopy machine was running low on ink that day and it's fine. The fax machine that they sent it over on was running low on ink that day and that's why the quality... They think we're stupid. Exactly. They really think we're stupid in a digital age.
They do, Ken. But what is really, again, concerning and disturbing is that back in November 2020, the EMA flagged, this is in their leaked rolling review report, there was a potential safety risk of an autoimmune response induced by the modified RNA. And I'm just going to quickly, the RNA that's in these vaccines have been synthetically modified. So for every uridine, BioNTech and Pfizer have replaced every single uridine with N1-methylpseudouridine. And there's a lot of safety risks to do with that. The fact that this is a synthetic RNA is that the body's never seen it before. So when the ribosomes come to read this modified vaccinal mRNA transcript, they get confused and you have a lot of errors occurring. I mean, there's so many errors to do with this, to do with the transcription, the translation, in the manufacturing process. There are so many things that could go wrong. I think Kevin McKernan states for every molecule, it's like 40 trillion molecules. He says but on every molecule, there is an error. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And anyway, August 2021, so now like over a year later, they also flagged the translated aberrant proteins, which are the divergent ones. They divert from what should be the normal spike protein. There could be these mutant spike proteins or mutant proteins. And they again flag an autoimmune response due to molecular mimicry, which is caused by these translated proteins, foreign proteins. And they wanted BioNTech to evaluate this safety risk. We do not know whether BioNTech ever did that. I haven't seen any evidence to show that they've done that. But what is disturbing is recently a Saudi Arabian university hospital conducted a study, the largest of its kind, which showed a link with the mRNA vaccines and to show that they triggered autoimmune diseases. And they use the mechanism of molecular mimicry, which is the exact same phrase that the EMA used, but that we're concerned about. And we found that, you know, this is happening.
And these things are still being administered, still mandated in many ways as well. This is incredibly, incredibly disturbing. Sonia, thank you so much for your amazing journalism on this. I will have a link to your second report in the description of this video so people can dive more deeply into these blot tests and charts and read these different reports themselves so they can see some of these characterizations of these exercises that they were doing and see these different batches and read them all, you know, more deeply into this. So I want to thank you once again, Sonia, for joining us here on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Clayton, for having me on.
So we will have a link to Sonia's report in the description below so you can read all about that. The data is pretty mind-blowing. I just think, Philip, when we look at these blot tests and as a molecular biologist, I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much like, I mean, biology porn in there for me. I was happy listening to that whole thing. But I've done these tests. I mean, it's been years and years ago. But I've done them and like you don't ever get clear lines like that. That's just not how it works. I mean, even if you look at like, you know, because people are probably all very familiar with like the COVID testing that they sent out, like those of us that had to take those like little, you know, home tests. Those lines weren't super, super clear. You can see that fading in there. That's how it works. Yeah. That's how typically it looks like. And to have those like crisp, nice lines, yeah, it's a printer issue, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's just a photocopier problem. So thanks to Sonia for that. And before we go, Wendy Moffitt sent in a photo of herself wearing a silence equals complicity. She's one of our viewers. And so she says she loves the shirt. She loves the show. If you get one of our shirts from our Redacted store, redactedstore.com, send us a photo. We'll try to show it here on the show. You can send us an email after you buy the shirt or a mug or whatever. It doesn't matter if it's a shirt. It could be a hoodie or anything else. I'm excited to get my hoodie in the mail. I can't wait. I'm super excited about it. And my new shirt, my Silence Equals Complicity shirt. I'm going to wear it right here on the show. Go to redactedstore.com. And support independent journalism, grab some merch, and then send us an email with your photo, you know, whatever you're wearing, your mug, anything. Photos at redacted.inc. All right, everyone. Thank you guys so much for joining us on this Thursday. We're back here on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Much love to all of you. Thank you guys for subscribing and have a great weekend, everyone. Bye now.